Welcome to the podcast, Your Time with James Sweetman. Welcome to this week's podcast, which is all about dealing with a difficult co-worker. You know, I can always predict that I will get a question in this area when I'm speaking to a group or delivering a workshop under the umbrella headings of maybe leadership, communication skills, sometimes even organizational skills or presentation skills. You know, someone's hand will go up and they'll say, well, you know, James, can I ask you something? And I'll go, of course. And they'll say, I'm working with someone and they're, you know, difficult, negative, cynical, skeptical, difficult to deal with, you know, won't follow instructions, etc., etc. And as I always say to them, you know, that is the challenging part of people management or leadership. But it's also where we'll hone our skills as well, because there's no skill involved in dealing with someone who just does everything wonderfully. Yeah. And of course, a coworker can be a colleague. It can be someone who's on your own team, or sometimes most challenging of all is when the, you know, the difficult coworker is your manager, you know, the person that you're reporting into. And in this week's episode, I'm going to share with you some observations in this area, some insights I've picked up over the years, and then, of course, a few maybe practical steps that you can take to adjust your own attitude or behavior in the context of relating better to the other person. So I hope you find these of benefit. So before I share some specific strategies with you, let me share some general observations in this area, because as I say, I've managed people in many groups over the years myself, and of course in the different organizations I'm in and the different workshops I run, I come across a whole range of people. And it's always fascinating, because when I get a question from an audience member around, you know, James, can you give me some advice on dealing with a coworker, I often start by saying to them that there's no one quick fix to this, because people, you know, we're complex, there's many different variables at play. Then you take the different environments that we're in and the diversity of environments and working cultures, etc. So there's no one quick fix to it. Having said that, there are certain common themes or issues that come up again and again, because at one level, whilst we're all different, sometimes we can be fairly predictable as well. The other observation that I would share, and it usually gets a laugh from the person or from the broader room, is, you know, is this challenging person, you know, are they really only an issue for you, or do other people have difficulties or challenges with them? And in the vast, vast majority of cases, you know, the person will say, well, no, it's not just me, it's everyone else has a problem with this person. And that, when we consider it, means that, well, it's not really to do with me, it is to do with them. That doesn't mean in the short term I don't have to figure out a way of engaging with them in a way that feels authentic or genuine to me, but the problem is not uniquely my own. What I often find is when individuals do have challenges with other people that is more uniquely their own, oftentimes the gift of wisdom then is even bigger. But I'll get into that in a little while. But that's just something useful to note up front. Oftentimes in this area, you know, it's not just me who has the challenge. There's a general principle that I operate to, and it's really core to all of my work, and it's relevant here as well, which is, you know, we're always doing our best. We never purposely show up to do less than our best. Now, that doesn't mean on some days our best is different than other days, and different people will have different definitions of best. But really, we're all trying our best. And even in dealing with difficult people, you know, there might be the days where we fly off the handle, or we react, or we respond passively and something eats away at us and we wish we had said something, but we didn't. You know, even on those days, we're still doing our best. Whereas with hindsight, of course, we might realize there was other choices available to us. And I'm a great fan of that Maya Angelou quote, you know, when you know better, you do better. And maybe that's an outcome of listening to this little podcast as well. You'll get a few little insights so that you know better and therefore you can do better. Of course, if we're holding ourselves to that standard, you know, that I'm doing my best, from where the other person is coming from, the difficult person, as we label them perhaps, they're doing their best as well based on their worldview. Now, it might seem a bit warped to us. It's like, how could that be their best? But from where they're coming from, they're behaving in a way that they feel it serves them best. and it can be difficult to understand, but we do have to hold them, you know, at the same standard we hold ourselves, in that we try to do our best all the time. Difficult or challenging behavior is a symptom, and it's always worthwhile to contemplate the cause, because it'll give us new insight and maybe a new handle in terms of how to approach a scenario. For me, there are many causes to difficult behavior, but there's a few common ones that appear again and again. First of all, it can be as simple as the person's, you know, way of being in the world. You know, there's nothing wrong with them. I mean, there's nothing wrong with any of us. We're all perfectly ourselves. But they have just a different style of approach, maybe a fairly different style to you. Some of that is based on metaprograms, if I put my NLP hat on. You may have come across personality assessment tools like Belbin or DISC or Myers-Briggs. They're all based on metaprograms, natural tendencies and preferences that we have. It's a bit like some people have blue eyes and some people have brown eyes. And, you know, that is what diversity is about, different learning styles, different approaches in situations. And there's nothing, you know, that's just the way it is. Other causes of difficult behavior, though, can be heavier or weightier. You know, I use the phrase, some people operate from their pain bodies, which is a phrase of Eckhart Tolle's in the referenced in The New Earth, which, of course, is one of the books I spoke about last week when I was on last week's podcast, when I was sharing some of my favorite reads. But he speaks about the pain body, you know, people who have wounds or bruises, hurt in their lives, difficult past experiences, and there's an added sensitivity to them. It's a bit like the analogy of someone rubs my arm, you know, it might annoy me a bit, but no big deal. Whereas if someone rubs an arm where I've just had stitches or I have a scar or a big bruise, that will get a bigger response. So some people are responding from their pain bodies, and most of the time that's based on fear. And this is a common behavior that you see in organizations where, you know, people's bark is used as a form of self-protection, you know, attack as a form of defense. Maybe people who are associated with old ways of doing things or resistant to change. All of that is ultimately based on fear, fear around their lack of competencies, or what they view as their lack of competencies being exposed. And they will defend that sense of vulnerability or insecurity that they're feeling. And the louder their bark, the more they'll push people away. And that's just a human response. Of course, cynicism is another behavior that we will often label as difficult or challenging. But for me, the root of cynicism is actually frustrated idealism, because cynicism grabs hold when our expectations as to how things could or should be in the world of work, or anywhere, come to think of it, is not equal to reality as I'm experiencing it. So therefore, I feel a negative emotion. And to numb down that emotion, cynicism will creep in. And if you think of the world of work and someone joining an organization or joining a team for the first time, you know, if they're new to a role, it's rare that they will come into it cynical. If they do, maybe the recruitment process is not what it could be. But it's often their response to daily experiences. Some of the other causes of difficult or challenging behavior would be a little deeper as well. You know, oftentimes the other person that we have a challenge with, particularly if the challenge with them is very individual to us, you know, it's not someone who has, you know, difficulty with loads of people, but if it's individual to you, they will often be a mirror reflection of an unowned aspect of your own personality. So what do I mean by that? You know, the way we use the phrase, they rub me up the wrong way or they push my buttons. Well, it sort of brings us into the territory of, well, what is that button and what is being pressed, and are you allowing it to be pressed? I think that's based on that old Bible quote of, you know, seeing the splinter in someone else's eye but not recognizing the plank in your own, you know, or like the magnetic poles clashing, as it were. So they're just a few broader observations when it comes to the causes of some difficult behavior. And as I say, if we're aware of them, it gives us new insight into how to approach the scenario. There are two golden rules when it comes to relationships, personal relationships, working relationships. I'll share the second one in a little while, but the first one here is important to emphasize. It's, you cannot change other people. You can only change how you relate to them. Now, wouldn't life be so much easier if we could click our fingers or wave a magic wand and say, I want you to be more open. I want you to be friendlier. I want you to be more responsible. But unfortunately, the world doesn't work that way. In every relationship, relationship, we are only responsible for 50% of the relating. That's our part, you know, particularly in relationships with adults. You know, it's a 50-50 deal. You know, the way in some scenarios we might feel like we're bending over backwards with someone, that's often a clue that we're trying to move beyond our 50%. But the flip side of that, of course, is I am 100% responsible for my 50%. And that includes my responses. That's often how I view the word responsibility, you know, being response able. So other people will do or say or behave in whatever way they can. I can choose how I respond to that. And that is central to the tips that I'll be sharing around dealing with more challenging or difficult co-workers. There's another analogy, well, not an analogy, it's a quote. It's one of my favorite quotes, actually, by Mother Teresa. And the quote is, if everyone swept their own doorstep, the whole world would be clean. So when it comes to difficult relationships, I want to make sure that my own doorstep is clean, you know, and that maybe I'm not demonstrating some of the behavior or attitude that I'm accusing the other person of behaving. So just another observation before I share some tips with you. Before I share some strategies that you can apply in handling a difficult coworker, let me take a moment to thank you again for tuning in. I've been delighted with the response to my podcast. I think we're up to about 1,000 downloads now, which is quite amazing. And if you've been enjoying them, do consider subscribing and perhaps making a review or giving me a star rating. So the first approach to dealing with a difficult coworker is to put on our learning lens. And I alluded to this earlier, because when we're dealing with a difficult situation or a difficult person, that's always an opportunity for us to enhance our people management skills, our leadership skills. Even broader than that, it can also shine a light on our communication skills, levels of emotional intelligence, broadening of self-awareness. So as I always say, those individuals who might have us pulling our hair out, they're actually our greatest teachers. And when I work individually with people in this area, that's often a realization that they come to. So here's a question to ponder. You know, in the dealing with that difficult person or that situation that you find yourself in, what might be the gift of wisdom that's wrapped up in that? You know, if the life or universe was presenting a gift to you in this scenario, what might that be? And whilst it's different for everyone, sometimes those scenarios are often a reminder to us of what's really important to us. You know, it's giving us contrast, greater clarity around what it is I want and what it is I don't want. There's usually an opportunity for resetting of boundaries that perhaps have become a little lax. Maybe I will realize that in some situations I've compromised too much, you know, or that I've given my power away. But when we realize that, of course, it's only in the recognition of having given our power away or disempowered ourselves that we can learn how to take it back. You know, there's that old Eleanor Roosevelt quote, again, another favorite of mine, no one can make me feel bad without my permission. And sometimes in the difficult scenarios, it's a wake up call to stop giving permission away. You know, let me acknowledge that other people have the freedom to choose to behave or their attitude or whatever it is. But equally, I have the freedom to choose how I wish to respond to that. The second tip or insight is really a critical one. One of the habits that we will have in dealing with a difficult person over a period of time is that either out loud or certainly in our own minds, we'll begin to label them. We'll begin to label them in a very one-dimensional way. And when we You know, when we get into the habit of viewing people in a certain way, it's like we're pre-programming our minds, our attention, to only notice a certain behavior in that person. So I remember a while ago working with the group, and one of the people in the room said that they had a difficult coworker, and I got him to speak about the scenario a little bit. And he referred to the difficult person as the cowboy. And I was having this image in my head of someone in Cuban heels and a Stetson. And we called him a cowboy. And that was the label that, you know, used in his own mind and with peers in referring to this other person. And I probably shook them a little when I said to him, your labelling of that person that way is part of the problem, because people conform to the expectations that we have of them. So one of the things that's vital in dealing with a difficult situation, and it's not the easiest thing to do, because it's easy to label someone and to have a moan about them to other people. But if we're looking to move the situation forward rather than just proving old mindsets to be right and to get attention from others and to get sympathy from others, one of the things we need to do is broaden our perspective, and the labelling of other people inhibits in that area. So the best way of broadening perspective is to take a moment and to think about one or two, maybe even three positive aspects of that person, because that shifts our perspective into something that's a little bit more neutral, maybe a bit more empowered, and we're certainly not blinkered. Because as I say, people correspond to the expectations we have of them. And ideally, in this scenario, what we're looking to do, or what we're looking initially to move away from, is rather than the worst of them, so the worst of their behavior, stimulating the worst in me, I'm trying to get to a place where the best of me, the best qualities within me, will reach out to the best in them. And that may not actually be achievable, but it's far more possible than me operating from a place of negativity or frustration. And how do we balance that out? We begin by contemplating some of the positive aspects of them, because there will be some things that they're doing well. There will be some aspects of their personality that are more positive. And we're just looking to focus on them and maybe relate to that aspect of them. But we can only do that when it's at the forefront of our mind. And that's where the old habit of labeling can be part of the problem. The odds are, if you're able to speak about the other person who has, you know, challenging behavior, or the difficulties that you have in that situation with them, the odds are, A, you've fairly good levels of self-awareness, probably healthy enough levels of emotional intelligence as well, and empathy skills, you know, empathy, the ability to put yourself in other people's shoes. And we'll often be in the habit of doing that, but sometimes it's negatively slanted. But if you have a skill of empathy and rapport building and the ability to see the world through other people's eyes, and often we'll do that for, you know, from a place of, oh gosh, I couldn't say that because they would respond in a certain way. We often see it negatively slanted. But if I do have those skills, let me use them in a more constructive way, or let me harness them in this scenario. So take a moment to think about that person that you have a challenge with. And just for a few seconds, imagine going inside their head, you know, see the world through their eyes. Put yourself in their shoes, as it were, which is one of the skills at the heart of leadership and communication skills. And if you put yourself into their shoes just for a moment, you know, it might be a scary place, but just for a moment, maybe contemplate the question from their experience, you know, what are they looking for from you? You know, so you're looking back at yourself from through their lens of the world, as it were. What are they looking for from you? Or what's their experience of interacting with you? So what we do when we do that is we, again, just get another perspective on the scenario. We're widening our perspectives. This time we're looking at it from their perspective. And in most relationships, the ideal is a win-win scenario. So both people are getting their needs met within it. And in this situation, what we're doing is just spending a few moments contemplating what their win might be. And they may not be able to voice it or share it. They mightn't even know it. But maybe with our own empathy skills, we can contemplate what it is they're really looking for. I'll give you an example here. I remember working with a younger manager, and they had an older person on their team, an experienced person, who they found difficult to manage. And they were frustrated. And, you know, that's understandable. We're all human. Our emotions are clues, you know, they give us signposts to take action, as it were. And reluctantly, this person went into the mindset of the other person and looked back on themselves. And almost reluctantly then as well, they said, when I asked them the question, what is this other person looking for from you? What is the team member looking for from you? And he almost vomited up the word respect, because from where the other person was coming from, with 30 plus years experience in the business and this younger manager now managing them, from where they were coming from, they felt they merited higher levels of respect and acknowledgement. Whereas maybe the younger manager was coming at it from a place of, you know, everyone is equal or you need to earn your respect or whatever. And there's no rights or wrongs with this. We're just looking to broaden perspective, because oftentimes the challenging situation has stimulated habits in us, habits of attitude and habits of response, and we're just looking to broaden those. The last tip is all about taking back control. Now, I can picture you rubbing your hands with glee. It's like, yes, this is it. I want to take back control. But there is a home truth I want to share with you, first of all. If you think about what we often do in our heads, and we all do this, and I even do this, you know, it's like we run a pattern that goes something like, well, I want you, difficult person, I want you to change your behavior or change your attitude or both, so that I can feel better and live my life in a happier way. You know, I want to be able to do my job better, so therefore I want you to change, basically. Now, when we say that out loud, it sounds a little strange. It sounds a little bonkers, but that's actually how we operate. It's like, I want you to change your behavior so I can feel better. That's a bit like the Mark Twain quote of, you know, I'm drinking the poison in the hope it kills someone else. And the poison being negative emotion or frustration. So how do we move forward from that, and how do we take back control? Well, the first step is about dealing with reality. You know, if as the great teacher and speaker and author, Byron Katie says, if you argue with reality, you will lose. So you might wish this person was other than what they are, but you can continue to wish that. You can continue to do the Mark Twain drinking the poison. It's not going to change them one iota. So we start by accepting reality. We have to accept where that person is at and relate to them accordingly. That doesn't mean we're giving up or we're washing our hands of a scenario. It's actually fairly empowering. It's looking to make peace, as Wayne Dyer would say. It's about making peace with what is. When we acknowledge that, we can then ask ourselves a few other questions. The second question is related to that second golden rule of relationships. Remember I mentioned the first one earlier, you know, you cannot change other people, you can only change how you relate to them. Well, the second golden rule is we train or we teach people how to treat us. So therefore, a question that's worth pondering is, how do I want to train or teach others how to treat me? That brings us into the territory of boundaries and compromises and flexibility and, you know, being a little bit stronger in what we stand for ourselves. Another question that helps in taking back control is spending a little time contemplating, what do I want in this scenario? And what do I want in this scenario that is within my control? Because most of the time, the focus will be on what it is we don't want. And anyone who's listened to my podcast over the weeks, and I've said this a few times, you know, the unconscious mind cannot process negatives. So if I'm focusing on what it is I don't want, I'm actually continuing to perpetuate it. So let me turn it around and say, okay, what do I want in this scenario? So at least I'm creating a little bit of a roadmap or a bit of a North Star that allows me to move in a particular direction. The third question that really helps in taking back control is operating at a being level rather than a doing level. So rather than thinking, what should I do here? It's like, who do I want to be in this scenario? And by that, I mean, what aspects of my personality do I want to bring to the fore? You know, it might be greater assertiveness. It might be greater calmness. It might be more courageousness. And the labeling of those is more than half the battle, because at least I know now what it is I'm aiming for here. So I've one more powerful question to share with you to bring this podcast to a close. But a quick little recap. You know, I opened by sharing some of the observations, particularly around the causes of difficult behavior. And then there was the few tips on maybe new insights or new approaches in dealing with the difficult coworker, you know, acknowledging that there's an opportunity to learn something here, and that oftentimes the most challenging people are actually our greatest teachers. The whole piece around broadening perspective and moving away from labeling that person in a one-dimensional way, because they will always correspond to how we view them or label them. Looking to harness then our empathy skills. Let me put myself in their shoes. What is it that they're looking for from me? What's their current experience of interacting with me? And sometimes that can bring up a few home truths for ourselves. And then there's that piece around taking back control. you know, acknowledging reality, making peace with it, and then those questions around how do I want to train or teach others how to treat me? What is it I actually want here? And what qualities or what aspects of my personality would be useful to bring to the fore? There's another question that is often how I initially respond when I get the question from people around how do I deal with difficult co-workers. And maybe at a conference or at a workshop, you don't have too long to go into, you know, even this depth of answer and the tips I've shared with you. I would operate from a place, as I say, that we're all doing our best, but that no one knows the situation you're in better than you do because you're in it. And therefore, the question, you know, what approach or what decision or what response on my part would make me feel most proud about myself is a great question to contemplate, because it harnesses our own wisdom. And it also ensures that we don't do self-betrayal. Self-betrayal is when we sort of let ourselves down. That's always difficult to swallow. So what approach, you know, what response on my part would make me feel most proud about myself will usually, like a laser beam, shine a light on an appropriate approach. I had that recently when a lady in a group said to me, you know, James, what would you do? I'm dealing with someone at work where I've actually witnessed bullying behavior. I'm not sure what to do. And I maybe had 2 minutes to answer this question. And, you know, there's so many variables at play in those scenarios. So I just posed that question to this lady. I said, what approach on your part would make you feel most proud about yourself? And she took a moment to contemplate it. And then just her eyes lit up and she said, I know what I need to do. And she didn't need to share it. You know, so a good question like that will always get us into our own wisdom. One final thought in this area, and I've been trying to keep the focus on dealing maybe with the difficult behavior in the context of dealing with a difficult co-worker. Because as I say, I think we're all trying our best all the time. And in when we think about someone who we have, you know, challenges with, it's their behavior that we have a challenge with. Maybe if we had their life experience or their work experiences, you know, or have dealt with everything that they've dealt with, you know, perhaps we might be demonstrating a similar behavior. So it's never the person. I think there's always good in people. It's just the behavior of that person that we're looking to find a way of dealing with in a way that's most authentic to ourselves. And that reminds me, and that was actually the prompt for this little podcast. Only last week I was doing an authentic leadership workshop, and one of the ladies in the group, when it was the Q&A at the end, she said, I've got a difficult co-worker, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I know the question is coming. And she said, James, how would you deal with it? And my initial response to her, because it was based on the topic I was speaking about, I said, it's to respond as authentically to that person as possible. And, you know, authentic leadership is a buzzword that's used, and I use it plenty myself. But this was a very practical example of it. You want to be able to respond to that person in a way that feels most authentic to you. And that's why those few tips that I've shared in this week's podcast helps us align with ourselves, because we cannot control the other person, but we can control how we deal with them. We can control how we respond to the uncontrollables. And the ideal is to respond to that in a way that feels most authentic to us. And that's why that last question, you know, what approach on my part would make me feel most proud about myself, brings us into that sense of alignment or authenticity. So I hope you found this week's episode to be of benefit. I suspect there was plenty of food for thought in there. Thank you again for listening, and until next time.